arm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's your brother, Vinyl Deets. Welcome to another Class War Battlefield podcast segment. My hat off, literally, I suppose, to Mr. Paul Ryan, who seems to be floundering a bit in the absence of, or should I say, in the event that he had to pull the health care bill that Donald Trump wanted them to bring to a vote. My hat off, not in honor or in respect, my hat off in frustration, because he, Mr. Ryan, is still lying. Sometimes I wonder about him. God, look at his face. I look at his eyes. And the man is tired. And he says some of the right things. But he's the head of a party that is absolutely batshit crazy. And I wonder sometimes if he understands this. And pardon my swearing, really. But, and really honestly, I take that batshit crazy comment back, because it's... The words that I'm actually looking for is not that. He's part of a group of a party whose ideology is based, one, on nostalgia. Things used to be great in the past, except when they weren't. But when they weren't great, it was because of radicals had gotten into the system. It's built secondly on scapegoating non-white people. Those Mexican immigrants, those black folks, those thugs. It's built on the rhetoric of naked physical military power. Law enforcement, thank you for your service. Thank the men and women who go off to fight wars to keep America safe for their service. But don't protect them from going off to those wars. Don't insist on peace. We need war so we can worship them. We need police officers to feel empowered so they can enforce the law. It's built on the premise that real Americans are white. And non-Americans just, you know, they're either left white people or non-white people. You know, lefties aren't real Americans. You know, black conservatives are somewhat Americans. They're tolerable Americans. But, you know, the rest of them thugs. I wonder if he understands this is the party that he's part of. And ultimately, the party that he's part of, and this doesn't excuse the Democrats, because the Democrats are in a similar circumstance on this level anyway. The Republicans and conservatives are 100% beholden to corporate power. They think in terms of drone corporatism. And when I say drone, I don't mean flying machines drones. I mean drone as in hive-minded. They protect the corporations. That's true Americanism. You want to protect the job creators, the corporations. The corporations create jobs. The corporations create jobs. Yes, yes. The corporations do create some jobs. They don't create all jobs. And in fact, history tells us, this is not fake. This is fact. This is not alternative. You can look in just about any history book, and you will have to find these facts. Corporations make some of the most disgusting and dangerous jobs seem palpable, seem beneficial. I swear, he is head of a party that believes technology and corporations are more important than people. And by the way, the technology which his party supports isn't technology that's going to push human endeavors forward. It's connected to the nostalgia. We need clean coal. No such thing. We need coal. It's not coming back. We need oil pipelines. Excuse me, this isn't 1917. Oil is on its way out. We need shale gas. So what? Oklahoma can have more earthquakes? Nebraska, Montana can have more earthquakes? Yeah, did you know? Since they've permitted fracking in Oklahoma over the past 2 years, Oklahoma has seen a dramatic rise in the number of earthquakes experienced. Some of them pretty dang large. You actually feel them. They're not just quick tremors. I wonder if he knows this. Now, even if he doesn't. Listening to the latest conference that he had on the bill, the American health care bill, which, you know, if you add an E to the end of that, switch that C and the H around, it spells ache. I kept seeing that. I'm like, America's health care, huh? You add an E to the end of that, switch that C and that H, and guess what? It spells ache. It spells ache. I mean, come on. Shouldn't that tell you already? Shouldn't that tell you already? But anyway, he was perpetuating lies. He was perpetuating lies. The first lie that he perpetuated was that Obamacare is hurting families. Yes, I suppose if you're making significantly more money, yes. Yes, it is hurting you. Because lo and behold, holy crap, you have to pay more. And yes, if you live in one of these Republican states or counties where your governor has said, we don't want the Medicaid, we don't want the grants that go with Medicaid, then yes, you'd be hurting. Not because of Obamacare, because Obamacare said, here, take the money. But because of your darn governor who doesn't want you to have it. You'd be hurting, yes. And then, I guess this wouldn't be a lie, but this statement should be underlined, and all of you really honestly should burn this into the back of your head. If Ryan is talking to Big Pharma, which we'll talk about competition in a second, but if he's talking to Big Pharma, and not Big Pharma, the big medical insurance companies, and they're saying that, oh, well, people just don't know about the rate hikes that are coming up. By the way, rate hikes, which would have been made illegal if the Republicans had not argued, if they had not argued and received the taking out of the bill. They wanted price checks. to be taken out of the bill. It was originally in the bill. They wanted it out of it. And the Democrats caved in like dumb. So he's talking to big businesses, big healthcare businesses, and they're already saying, well, we're getting ready to raise people's the price that they pay significantly. If they're already saying this, that means this isn't about care. This isn't about the price that they're paying, because guess what, ladies and gentlemen? They're still making money. CEOs and top management and investors aren't losing money. If they're already saying this, I mean, you know what this means? They have a plan to try to crater the healthcare system, which proves why we need at least a public option to keep them honest. Because they are going to do what they can to not have to serve the public good. Again, they will do whatever they can to not have to serve the public good. They're already planning it. And by the way, don't think it's coincidence that in the late part of 2015 into the early part of 2016, they started fooling with the pricing of healthcare and fooling with the pricing of medicine that people needed to survive. Because what they were doing was trying to orchestrate exactly what they got now, which was a Republican-led White House and a Republican-led Congress. That is exactly what they wanted, because, see, they thought what was going to happen was Donald Trump was going to come in, pass this bill, people were going to be mystified and say, oh my God, we are so beaten, we are so dejected, we can't do anything about it. And what happened? No. People got up and said, to hell with you, we like what we're getting with this. And even the right-wing Republicans who tried to say, oh, this is just a liberal conspiracy. When you had Republicans saying, no, I'm a Republican, I voted for this monster, I don't want you touching my health care. Suddenly, they couldn't say anything. They couldn't say nothing. Quickly about the competition aspect, because people talk about this a lot. And to me, this is fascinating. This is fascinating. As if competition never existed before. The Obamacare, quote, the Obamacare, which is really RomneyCare, which is a bill. Romney passed a bill which was created by, have you ever heard of this liberal think tank, this liberal foundation called the Heritage Foundation? That is who actually created RomneyCare, which was the chief architect, map for Obamacare. You had, prior to, quote, Obamacare, prior to RomneyCare, you had competition. And you know what we had? We had prices going through the roof. I will never in my life forget 2004. I was working my first job where I actually had health care. Had it. It's 22. I had been working since I was 17. But this was my first actual job where I had healthcare, and I think it was because I was working for a defense industry company. And I was reading, I think it was in Times Magazine, an article about healthcare and the price of healthcare. And I remember thinking to myself, because the price of healthcare had increased again, and was looking like it was going to continuously increase over the next few years. And I remember thinking to myself, why in the heck does healthcare cost so much in the United States? And then the article went on to actually speak about that. And that made it very clear to me. Time Magazine, this is no liberal rag. This is Time Magazine. Even they had to admit there were certain things about the unchecked healthcare system of the United States, which supposedly fostered competition to bring prices down. You had a lot of companies still existent there who did not bring prices down, even when they didn't have to cover people who had pre-existing conditions. They milked those who they did have for every penny. Competition doesn't do anything. nothing, zilch. And in fact, one of the points that Mr. Ryan makes, which is the lack of competition in some areas of the country, that competition is lacking not only because of federal regulation, and most of the time, not because of federal regulation, but because of state regulations. And because, again, you have smaller companies, and I again, tip my hat off to the Brad blog, Bradcast, who spoke about this. You have smaller entities, cooperatives in some instances, or just small companies, that went out of business after Obamacare came into effect, because they couldn't gain access to some of the monies which they were supposed to have access to because the Republicans prevented them from doing that. And this was after 2010, after they came into office again. Competition does nothing for pricing. You know, you can have competition all you want, but if you have one of those companies that is capable to drive up the price or even drive it down for a while, put the other ones out of business, then they'll just drive the price right back up. This is something that's been done in capitalism so long, it's not even, you recognize that it's part of what happens in capitalism. You don't even question it anymore. It's just capitalism. That's what people do when they're capitalists. They will go into a market, they will pack away some capital from banker buddies that they have, and then they'll drive down the prices for 5 or 6 years to all the little guys can't stomach it anymore and have to go out of business. And as soon as that competition is gone, they then jack up the price and say, well, now we can make all the money we want. Walmart has been doing this for years. Competition means nothing. You want to keep them honest, give them a public option that they have to actually contend with. Which, if you don't believe me, you got to think about, this is why old folks love Medicare, because Medicare controls the cost not only on the end for recipients, but it also controls the overhead. I think the last time I checked Medicaid, the overhead was about 3%, maybe a little bit less. It might be a little bit higher now. But most companies, most healthcare companies, you have to put, you know, a zero in back of that. That's overhead. 30%, 20%, very rarely under 15%. There's a time, one company I think, I remember made the newspapers back in late 2009 because, I mean, it was almost up to 40% overhead. Why was it up that high? Because they were paying their CEOs, they were paying their managers exorbitant prices to stay in those positions. It wasn't actually going to making healthcare better for the individual people. And this is basically what they've been doing for the last 20 plus years. They've been jacking up prices so they could get rich. They have not actually improved the system. They have not improved the quality of healthcare. They have just jacked up the price so they can get rich. Obamacare was not perfect. The ACA was not perfect. It wasn't. But I'll tell you what, it's better than I had before. And I'm not apologizing for that. I'm not. If we truthfully want to make, if we want to shore up healthcare in this country, there's a couple of things we could do immediately. The first one is put in price checks. Oh, well, that's not free market. I don't give a damn about free market. I don't. Take it somewhere else. Don't care. Free markets don't exist anywhere in the world. It exists on a whiteboard in some conservative's head. It doesn't exist. Free markets don't exist. A real free market would consist of a bunch of bankers, mobsters, and gangsters shooting it out to have control of the entire market, which is your community, your county, your region, your state. That is a free market. If you do not, honest to God, believe me. When people talk about back in the day, it was really, really good. Go back to 1890s, 1880s, 1900s, the first decade of the 20th century. And look at what was actually going on while capitalism was developing from a free market to a more regulated market. And you will see a free market. And all of those things that I just described was what was happening then. You had bankers. You had mobsters, a lot of them businessmen. You had gangsters. And when I say gangsters, I'm talking gangsters. Some of them as businessmen too. But these people were ruthless. And if you got in their way, they would not hesitate to gun you and your family, children, women, and all down. They would kill you in broad daylight. They would kill you in pitch black. Hell, they would want to kill you in broad daylight to make it known to everyone else. This is the power that I have. Mess with me, this is what happens to you. You. This is a free market. They don't exist anywhere. And where they do exist, it's nuts. It's crazy. You wouldn't want to actually live there. Guy that I work with, the plant that I work at presently, which again, I will reiterate for all of you who do not know, I am a lower level worker. I'm not a manager. I am not somebody making big bucks. I'm a lower level worker. That plant, before it was purchased by the bigger company that it was purchased by about a year and a half ago, a few years back, decided to send some of its departments down to Mexico. And of course, as companies do, they looked at the people who were getting ready to be put out of work by the plant closures and movement down to Mexico to go down and teach the Mexicans how to do their job. So people did. They went down to teach the Mexicans how to do the work that they were now leaving. And what they saw was a free market at work. The community which they stayed in literally had a fence around it with armed guards, not with little pistols either. They had guns. They had guns, military-style guns. And what they told the Americans staying there, once you leave this perimeter, what happens to you is not our fault. That's a free market, ladies and gentlemen. Free markets do nothing but empower the disgusting people among the group. Free markets do nothing. But we can put in price checks. We should put in price checks. You want to foster competition? That's good. How about we put in a mandate that says if you form a regional cooperative to improve healthcare, to improve health services, what have you, and your members make less than $50,000 a year. This includes the people at the top. Then you will become first in line for certain monies on the federal level. How about we do it? Conservatives like to talk about, oh, well, we want states to have rights. We want the regions to have rights. This is a regional idea, where then all the federal government's doing is acting as a bank. We'll keep the money. You show the records that you can comply with this list of stipulations, and we'll give you the money. Boom. There you go. We can do that. I still say public option. I still say universal health care, but okay, fine. Let's do it. How about this? This is even crazier. Let's improve Obamacare by doing something that I think President Trump should do, because Obama tried doing it, and Obama should have done it, which is build more infrastructure. How about we take instead of putting, I forgot how much the increase in the building of prisons they want to actually do, but instead of doing that, how about we, I don't know, we put $15 to $20 billion into building some of the most grandiose hospitals across the country. Grandiose hospitals, boom. And then we put another $15 to $20 billion into sending people to school to become doctors. Don't make it a generational thing, because that's what this is turning into. Most doctors are just generational. They get reproduced and, you know, they're basically middle class already, making their parents making $150,000+ anyway. So then they go in, they go to school for 12 years, and then now they're making that money, but now they're a doctor. How about we take some of the people at the bottom, and we take maybe a good 20 or 30,000 of them, train them to be doctors? A little bit harder, I suppose. But we can do these things. This is not hard. This is not hard. This is not rocket science. This can be done. But we just have to really honestly find the will to do it. We talk about healthcare. I got into this argument with a conservative friend of mine back when the healthcare debate was raging in 2009, 2010, when he said to me, and he's went a little bit low lately, which makes me want to put quotation marks around that friend sometimes, but he said to me, you know, healthcare is not a right. You know, it's not a right. The Constitution and doesn't say anything about a right to entitlements. And I said to him, I go, no, but this document that you guys worship called the Declaration of Independence says something about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I apologize, but maybe it's just me. Maybe it's my ignorance, because that's how he talks to me. Maybe it's my ignorance, but in order to pursue life, liberty, and happiness, I must be healthy. I must be healthy. Meaning, in order to enjoy life, I must have a healthful body. And even if I don't have a healthful body, to have health care in my diseased state helps me remain happy. To pursue liberty, well, you must also be healthful. Which is funny, because when a person goes to prison, the state is happy and conservatives are happy to pay for healthcare services in prison in order to ensure them that they can stay in prison to serve out their sentence. But when you are outside of prison, well, life doesn't matter that much. Neither does liberty. And liberty, in order to be safe in your possessions and what have you, you must feel safe in body. If you are harmed in your home, guess what? You are afraid that someone's going to come in and take your stuff. The same goes, I mean, come on. Everyone knows all of this. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And his only response was, the Constitution doesn't guarantee it. And you're twisting the words of the Constitution. I am not twisting the words of the Constitution. I am reading them as they are and describing what is necessary to make real that vision. Unless they didn't mean that vision, which he couldn't really say that they didn't mean it, because if you worship it, that means you believe they meant it. You believe they meant it. We can do this. We must do this, in fact. But we have to decide to do it. It's a little bit hard for me sometimes to understand how people can allow themselves to fall into such a degraded state and not find the motivation to get out of it. It floors me. Are people that disempowered? Do they not feel they have the ability to fix this society anymore? Actually, I suppose that question is a little redundant. Because you feel disempowered, then of course you don't feel like you have the power to fix the society in which you are part of anymore. But this is the problem. If people don't feel like they have the power to fix the society, then you have to start questioning and asking yourself, not why, because I think we all possibly have an idea why. But then what do you do to get out of it? I have advocated time and time and time again that the reason the wealthy put so much money into smashing radical thought. Smashing radical thought. The reason why they put so much money into it is because radicalism, the radical fire in the stomach, in the mind, in the heart, is the only true contender to beat back capitalism and to destroy it. That's the only thing that can actually present an alternate vision that will actually solve the problems that capitalism purports to solve and solve the problems which capitalism creates. It is really a combination of all of the rejected ideologies that corporations hate, which they have worked diligently to taint, because they gotta. Do not ever forget, and this is one of the most important things that I will ever say to you, ladies and gentlemen. A rainbow is merely a light beam fragmented. And when you do not realize that that is what you are seeing, it actually diminishes your ability to see the beauty of that rainbow. Because then you really have to ask yourself, how is it that something as extraordinary as those colors can be fragmented or can be placed together to make clear light? What we call radical thought, when we talk about radical thought, we talk about it in streams. Anarchism, communism, communalism, which the United Nations has really flipped on its head. So communism, anarchism, communalism, socialism, and even to some extent, a lot of people kind of take social work and also separate it. So you have those different strands. Yeah, I'm probably forgetting one or two in there too, but you have those different strands, and we see them as separate strands. I think they are together as one rope. That you take the principles of communism, which is more state-oriented. In other words, it can work on the small level, but it also helps to organize on the larger level, which is somewhat anarchism talks about that too. Then you have social. Actually, let me back up. Got this wrong. Communism is on the lower level. Socialism is the more elevated form of that, where that forms the basis of the state. It's the longer view, the longer vision. Then anarchism kind of interweaves in between the different levels of the socialism and communism. And then ultimately, communalism works to govern the guidance between the communes and other communes, and then other states, or excuse me, other communities of communes and other communities of communes. And then you twist all of that together, and the interwoven functionings of the people is captured in the idea of the social worker. And not the social worker as in everybody's going to be a social worker, they're going to work for the government, because that's not what most of these actually talk about. I know socialism got off on that path in the 1800s, but most of these have their roots in very egalitarian-oriented societies where that was not what they were intended to do. It was not what they were intended to do. But the social worker it really pushes you to understand that you are a droplet in a bucket, and that what you do has an impact on that bucket. It doesn't prevent you from having a life of your own, but it does say, consider where you're going and what you're doing in the whole. It actually empowers you and tells you, you're a divine being down here. God does want you to be happy. God wants you to do a lot of good stuff with your happiness. But remember, God has others just like you down here, and you, being a droplet from the Most High, have a responsibility to those other droplets from the Most High. Now, I know this isn't going to work for some people who are, you know, atheists or, you know, don't really lean in the direction of spirituality and religion, but that's essentially, it gives you that higher vision. And so it's in my mentality where I think all of these things, which, you know, people, we like to argue with each other. We do. We like to argue with each other about finer details. But I think all of these really wrap up together, and it's a rope. It's all of these are strands of the whole. All of these are strands of the whole. And ultimately, the cooperative ethic is what really binds them and brings them all together. If we were to understand this and to really infuse it in who we are, then we would get why revolution, nonviolent revolution at that, is so dangerous. Because ultimately, it is all of these things that capitalism seeks to explode. It seeks to destroy. And people know this. They get this. Everywhere capitalism has went, it has destroyed the social foundation of the people living in those areas. And therefore, all of these things which have to do with a collectivist idea, which, yeah, it may be primitive to capitalists, but people lived off of that way of life. You can critique it, you can organize it differently, but they lived off of that way of life often for tens of thousands of years. Capitalism has been around for just over 500, and it's collapsed numerous times, and it looks like it's collapsing again. These ideas, which form the basis of collectivists, or are formed by the basis of collectivists and collectivism, they are really the only salvation for the human race. And I use that really tongue-in-cheek because I hate that. This is not a human race. To say we are a human race is to say that we are in constant competition with one another. And we are not. We are a human family. And one part of the family has started beef with the rest of the family. This is what we have to realize now. This is what we have to see. This is the only way that we're really going to save ourselves. Now, if you ain't about saving the planet, saving the human family, saving the species that give our lives great meaning, I don't know what to tell you. I really don't, because it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And if you really want a free market, well, that's coming. It's coming. And it's going to be sad when it gets here. It's going to be real sad when it gets here, because I don't think many of you understand the dreariness of the world that is being created by our inaction and our unwillingness to look at the radical reality of who and what human nature is. I'm not talking about being anti-anything. I'm not talking about being pro-life in the truest sense. If you are pro-life, it doesn't mean that you care about the fetus when it's in the womb. It means you care about human life. You can't claim to be pro-life if you are not concerned with human life. It is amazing to me that no left person has seemed to... they have put it together, but this hasn't become a rallying cry. I am pro-life because I care about life. It's not about the fetus. It's about the human. It's about the being which that fetus is part of. So therefore, when that fetus gets out of that womb, I want the best conditions available for that fetus to mature in. If you don't care about anything but that fetus, you ain't pro-life. You're pro-fetus. That's it. You're pro-fetus. You're not pro-life. You are pro-fetus. Mainly because, as I've said to my friends, if you are Christian and you believe that God knows everything, and you can stand there and you can tell me that, well, maybe God knew that you were going to be raped and you were going to have this baby and, you know, it was going to be a, you know, good positive thing. Well, okay, you could tell me that, but yet you can't swallow the fact that maybe God knew that this baby was going to be aborted and was saying, whew, we really dodged that one. You weren't supposed to get pregnant yet. Or maybe God said, you need to abort this kid because this ain't going to be a good ending. You can only see one side, but not the other. But that's for another show. You know, sadly to say, this was not always the way I thought about abortion. But it's for another show. You know, I've done a lot of growing in the last couple of years. Just let me put it that way. I'm not former conservative. I'm not that. I used to be a socialist. I am definitely becoming reacquainted with it presently. And claiming it again. But, I've grown a lot. I've grown a lot. And just like the last episode, I intended this to be a clip. This is not a clip. This is a complete show. So there will be other clips in this when I put it together. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me. And, actually, let me... before I stop this, let me go on here and play these clips. This is Biomere Deef. I'll see you on the other side.
You think you have the last laugh, now you know this can't be true. Even though the sun shines down upon you now, sometimes you must feel blue. You make the best of each new day, you try not to be sad. Even though the sky falls down upon you, at midnight feeling bad. When you wake up to the promise of your dream world coming true, with one less friend to call on, was it someone that I knew? Away you will go sailing in a race among the ruins. If you plan to face tomorrow, do it soon. The road to love is littered by the bones of other ones who by the magic of the moment were mysteriously undone. You try to understand it, but you never seem to find any kind of freedom. Coming clean is just another state of mind. When you wake up to the promise of your dream world coming true, one less friend to call on, was it someone that I knew? Away you will go sailing in a race among the ruins. If you plan to face tomorrow, do it soon. So take the best of all that's left. You know this cannot last. Even though your mother was your maker, from her apron strings you pass. Just think about the fool who by his virtue can be found in a most unusual situation, playing jester to the clown. When you wake up to the promise of your dream world coming true, with one less friend to call on, was it someone that I knew? Away you will go sailing in a race among the ruins. If you plan face tomorrow, do it soon. When you wake up to the promise of your dream world coming true, with one less friend to call on, was it
Class War Battlefield podcast segment. Thinking about Neil Gorsuch. You know, it's almost a cruel irony to me that his name has Gore in it, as if this is a means in which the conservatives are slapping us in the face and saying, oh, you wanted a Gore in office. Well, here's your Gore. So we get Gorsuch instead of Gore. But, I was thinking, the Democrats are not putting up a very big fight about this. They're not. And I was thinking why that is. I have always, of course, advocated that the elite were in a power struggle with each other. But the atmosphere in which that power struggle is taking place, I haven't necessarily discussed apart from the actual power struggle. Everybody knows right now, and if they don't, then their heads are in the sand and that's their problem. But everybody understands that the neoliberal project is in trouble, that it's crumbling, that it's not working. There are problems in Europe, there's problems in Japan, in China and Japan, there's problems in India and Brazil. Some of these problems, by the way, are created by the West. But the neoliberal project, the neocolonial project, which is really what it was, is crumbling. The United States is crumbling. And so it dawned on me the other day when I was talking with a friend. What if, and this is a hard thing to actually say because it is, I understand that this is true for certain aspects of the society, but to really know that it might be true for the rest of the society is hard. What if the United States has been fascistic for the last 30 years and people just haven't understood that this was a new type of fascism? If you really honestly think about the United States, if a country could impose fascism without its people actually knowing that they were in a fascistic country, it would be this country. Why? Because elements of fascism have always been here. And in fact, in the late 1800s, when capital ruled, you couldn't describe this country as anything but fascist. If you look at, and I know some of you have, I really encourage you, for God's sakes, to find these things and give them to your conservative family members and say, look, you may not like this history, but this is real history, and this is our history. This is the history which you come from and I come from. Find labor stories, documentaries, and give them to them. And say, is this really what you want? Because this is what these people really want again. Do you want to be working for 10 cents an hour? Do you want to have the militia roused by corporations to come in and shoot you when you don't want to say, let's work for 10 cents an hour. I'm good with that. We can live off of that. Do you want your town owned completely by the corporation, not somewhat completely, completely? You go to the store, it is owned by the business which you work for. You go to the school, if there is a school, and it is owned by the business which you work for. You use everything in that town, and it is owned by the business in which you work for. Do you really want that again? Because this is what these people want. You go places in the world and it is still like that. Except now you have 10 companies that own everything in the town. But we've always in this country had fascistic elements. And the idea I'm starting to really see of the middle class is that you don't have to deal with those elements. In fact, you get to participate in keeping those elements functioning for the rest of the society, particularly those below you. This is why, even though police officers aren't paid that well, they are considered part of the middle class. Why soldiers, even though they're not paid that well, they are considered part of the middle class. Because ultimately, when you go again to the labor wars, there were numerous times. And truthfully, I often forget this. I was watching a documentary this past weekend, which reminded me of this. I used to know this just because of stuff that I've read and stuff that I watched. I understood this, and I forget about it. But in the labor wars, the police officers were owned by the corporations. They were not your friends. The militia was owned by the corporation. It wasn't your friend. And to the extent that there was a militia that was your friend, they were usually unionists. They were people who were trying to unionize, trying to increase the betterment of their lot. So it's amazing to me that this stuff is forgotten. But the elements of fascism have always been there. And then, of course, you do have the reality of black people. Black people have always lived in a fascistic state in this country. Which is why so many of them, once when they get a chance to get out of that mess, they are quick to say, well, I don't necessarily need the other black folks, I just need to be good up here. But when you look at the 1921 massacres, Red Summer, over 100 cities, communities of black people razed, economically stable communities razed and shattered by throngs of men with guns, led and encouraged on by the police and by corporations. This was fascism, pure and simple. You've always had it. And for the first time in the 60s, you had a rebellion, a mass civil rebellion. Actually, you kind of had it in the 30s, too. You had it in the 30s. You had socialist, communist, anarchist governments coming into power. But as soon as the 30s went away, corporations set to work to poison the idea that socialists, communists, anarchists, and the like were beneficial for you and to you. This was the Red Scare of the 50s. There wasn't no damn Red Scare of the 50s. There was a purge. There was a purge of people who were considered radical. It's almost funny. If you take it, I don't know exactly what you would use the E for. But when you look at the word scare, S-C-A-R-E, if I have it correctly, close to scar, but scare, and the S would be socialist, the C would be communist, the A would be anarchist, the R would be radical, What would the E be? Egalitarian? The Red Scare. No, it was a Red Scare Purge. Or maybe even if you have to drop the E, then it's the Red Scar Purge. The Red Scar Purge. They set to work to evict all of those, the only elements in the society that could actually fight against capital and fight against fascism, they purged it out. Liberals aren't going to fight against it. They're part of it. As long as they can maintain privileged positions, they don't give a damn. They got their money. That's why when I think about how the Democrats, the liberals, are reacting to Gorsuch, this society is fascistic already. It's been there for a while. And they know it. They have no power. They have no power. The conservatives have everything, and the conservatives know it. And until the people who get there are truthfully, honestly, not from the middle, which are the liberals, but are radicals, and say, to hell with you, you kill me, that's fine. But people are going to know why you're doing it. If you besmirch my name, that's fine. People are going to know why you're doing it. Because all of you have that F next to your name. Fascist. Boom. End of the road. Fascist. That's who you are. Conservative, liberal, you are all in it together. That's it. Now, if you want to prove me wrong, start doing something that actually freaking matters. Other than that, you are no different than the ones who you were supporting. This is a fascistic country. This is a fascistic society. And the liberals, the Democrats, they know it. They're just rolling over and saying, to hell with it. We got our money. Who cares? And truthfully, the purging that they did of the real left in their midst, that's what tells you that they know this is just fascistic 100%, and they don't give a damn anymore. You want to know a person who really honestly, I think about this sometimes, who could have honestly taken the cleaners to Mr. Donald J. Trump if he hadn't been taken out by his own party? Mr. Elliot Spitzer. Because Spitzer was going to be running this election cycle, and they took him out, and they have not let him run again. And so, and Lord knows, I know there's other people. I know you know people. But I know it's not good news, but it's time that we face where we're at. I'll see you on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother, Brian Mendes. Welcome to another segment of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. I tell you, thinking about something that I think we all need to put some minds and thought into, some energy into. We are witnessing a fragmentation of society, and it's being done from an academic level. when we talk about identities, from an academic level, identities make a lot of sense. However, I've maintained for quite some time that identities is really just a swap out for the word lifestyle. And if you ever seen the four-part series, Century of Self, you'd see that the idea of lifestyles didn't really come into vogue into the or until the 70s, although it was being used to describe people in the way that they lived prior to the 70s. It wasn't really made popular in the general populace until the 70s. And the idea of the lifestyle was it sought to define your activities so marketers could sell you products. Sound familiar? So, identities is the new lifestyle marketing gimmick. If you are gay, you act this way. So therefore, if you act this way, then you fit into this culture. And if you fit into that culture, then you fit into this concept of wearing this, and this. And if you really see, you will notice that there is different cultural lines drawn for each identity. And within those cultural lines, there are products which usually go with them. This is very important to realize, because if this is true, which I remember, I watch very little TV, but I do watch. I've been a fan of South Park and The Simpsons and Family Guy for years. So on South Park, you may remember the episode called South Park is Gay, where all the people suddenly wanted to be gay because metrosexuality was big on TV. So they imported that cultural style. This is not to say that gay people ain't gay. Stay with me here. Don't get triggered off of this nonsense, okay? This is reality stuff. Gay people are gay. But for so long, you couldn't even tell a gay person when you met them. And don't give me this bull crap of gay people has been in the closet and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. In certain circles, yeah, they had to be in the closet. Mostly upper-class circles and middle-class circles. Nothing to do with lower-class people. Well, depending on what cultural background you were from, it had something to do with that too. But most people still knew who the hell was gay, and they knew what those gay people were doing. I lived in a community where there were two black gay people. Everybody knew they were gay, and everybody knew that gay or even undercover black guys would go and see them. Everybody knew it. It wasn't a secret. And so I know if this was going on in the 80s, and from what I understand in the 70s, from what I was told, if this was going on in a small town where the population was predominantly white, and everybody knew this about this gay black person, I guarantee that in white communities, it wasn't a shock when Johnny came out in the 80s or the 90s and said, yeah, I kind of like penis. I kind of like penis. Only idiots wouldn't have been able to see that. And people in sharp denial. So I guarantee it was known. The problem was people just didn't talk about it. But you couldn't tell a person was gay usually by just looking at them. They would have to open their mouths, or there would be maybe some definitive feature where you'd say, oh yeah, gay people kind of wear that more so than other people, so yeah, they might be gay a little bit. But there were many button up and button down people who showed no proclivity of being gay whatsoever, but well, lo and behold, they were gay. Now, I'm using this as an example because when you move out of that identity, when you move out of the gay identity, what you get is more of a hodgepodge. It's depending on what region you're going to how people dress and how they respond and how they act. So this is probably the most universally easiest to mention. But with black people, you see the same thing. Whereas certain symbols of the 60s and the 70s were considered radical symbols, and if you wore them, if you donned them, that meant you were making a political statement. In today's era, they're just things that you do. They're just things you do. And there is no real meaning behind it. And this is the whole idea behind identities. Identities is a psychological concept. Oh, well, how is identities a psychological concept? Because I identify this way. Yes, and you just explained why it's a psychological concept and not a, well, cultural concept. It's not, and to be honest with you, it's a psychological concept so far as it could be used to sell you stuff. So I want to make that very clear, because that's the whole point. If it is, as I believe, just a swap out for lifestyles, which it really, it appears to be, a person can go through different identities in their lives. For instance, if for 5 years you work at a fast food joint, well then, you identify as a fast food worker. Even if you're a manager, you still work in fast food. Well then, if you get a job being a legal aide for 7-8 years, then you now identify as a legal aide. And now you have to culturally fit into being in that situation and environment. So then, after being a legal aide, maybe you get a job as a attorney somewhere. So now you are an attorney. You identify as an attorney. And then you get tired of that after 6 or 7 years. And maybe now you want to go and you've been studying computer science or something. And so now you're going to go and be a network technician. So now you are identified. See what I'm saying? And you see this with people who are massively, massively confused about who they actually are. So for instance, I was watching a video on YouTube of this girl in her video, she's talking about something completely different, but I noticed that she brought up her identity a few times. And she went from identifying as a woman, which is, okay, she's a woman, so whatever. She is an Arab woman with very, very, very light features. You cannot tell that she is Arabic at all. You'd think that she was from Europe, and probably from an area of Europe where they do not get a lot of light. That's how pale this girl was. But she moved forward with her identity and said, well, I'm a gay person. So I identify as being gay. Okay, that's cool. And then, not even 10 minutes later, she's talking about how going to her girlfriend's house, her father, her girlfriend's father was racist and only really liked her because his little girl was dating her. And so on one such occasion when she went over to her girlfriend's house, she was talking about a friend of hers and whose other house that she'd been over to was a black guy. And she just drops suddenly that she'd been intimate with him. And that completely flipped the switch in my head. Wait a minute. You say that you're a gay person, but you slept with this black male. And from the way she said it, I'm imagining more than once, and probably even at a couple of times when she was even with another woman. So I see this in many videos that I'm watching where people will say, well, I identify as this, I identify as that, I identify as this, or I used to identify as this, now I identify as that, as if they're putting on and taking off clothing. This is mass confusion. And this presents problems then in the political landscape, because you no longer have an idea of where you, of what ends you are seeking. When you are confused with who you are, when you can't even healthfully define who you are, then how are you ever going to define what you want in life and where life is going to ultimately take you? This gets me back to the idea now of liberation. When we talk about liberation, we're talking about it in the terms of lifestyles and identities. This is dangerous. This is massively dangerous because the identities and the lifestyles are meant to fragment society. It's meant to create sub-markets. It's meant to create markets and sub-markets and sub-markets of those sub-markets. That's what identities are meant to do. So therefore, when you apply that to politics, you have a fractured and fragmented vision. Because now, whereas you have liberation, which means different things for each subgroup. You have liberation, which means different things, different things for each group. I just saw something, and it was unexpected, so pardon me for the laughing. But you do. Liberation means different things for each group, and then different things mean, or liberation means different things for each subgroup within that group because of identities. But yeah, if you take the identities away and you allow people to fit into their groups, then liberation becomes more cohesive and collective. So therefore, if you are a gay person but you are white, your idea of liberation is vastly different than somebody who is gay and they are black. The same goes with white women and black women, or Puerto Rican women and Mexican women. All different types of liberation that is needed there. And I'll tell you, outside of this just being a marketing ploy, to me, this seems almost like it is designed psychological warfare, because it ultimately skews and confuses political aims. It ultimately does that. So this is something that we got to really, really get away from. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'll see you on the other side. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is your brother, Vimer Deeds. Thank you for listening to those clips. Just a couple of cleanup comments here. I want you to all understand, I'm very spiritual when it comes to this. I've said it many times before. And when I talk about my Christian friends, I am not disparaging Christianity. I think, unfortunately, Christianity in many aspects has been hijacked. I do think that many of my friends are very good people. And I pause when I say that because I wanted to say originally that I think they are very good Christians, but I think they're very good people. And the Christian aspect of themselves is far more destructive than they think. You know, it goes to the ego instead of going to the soul. And many of them don't see that. And it's a shame. And I've only started really realizing this over the last couple of years. But it does. It goes to the ego. It doesn't go to the soul. And going to the soul is something that this country desperately needs. It needs to be reacquainted with the soul of its of the possibility that was created when it was created. Ultimately, though, and I hate to say this, I think the soul is afar off. It might even be out of reach. And that the contentions and the actions put into time by the founding fathers may have baked into this country its demise. That in fact, according to how this country was started, it can not survive. Now, this isn't the pessimist in me. This is me realizing the pattern of energies in history. That this country was wrestled away from a people who were fragmented when they were placed into conflict with the Europeans. It was conquered by a people who had been very fragmented up until a brief time prior to the discovery of the of North America, quote, Asia. And it may indeed be the fragmentations of both groups of people which are having the most dramatic effect on this planet, on this land. I personally think and believe and hope that this country can survive. But prophecy isn't on the side of the people who are living here now. Some prophecy is. Some prophecy isn't. Anyway, until we find out if either prophecy is true, I'll be back. So, you know, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, you know, reach out to me. You know, thank you all for giving your time and effort to listening to the podcast. I really do believe I do believe that it's an act of the Most High when we come together, because, you know, honest to God, I truthfully did not expect to be doing this again, and boom, here I am. And the fact that you guys are still sticking with me is amazing, is absolutely fundamentally amazing. So thank you very much. Again, question, comments, concerns, reach out to me. And I'm your brother, Vimer Deese. Peace.
There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun.